Excellent. Today is Tuesday, June 14th, and we are on the member prospect call. And Ken Robinson is our member host. Ken has practiced law for 3 years and spent the next 10 as an insurance risk manager in the public sector. He passed the CFP exam in 1999 but wanted real-world understanding of financial planning. So he joined ACA with the January 2000 training class and has been glad he did ever since. ACA and its members have helped Ken build a thriving and expanding financial planning practice. An author of 5 books on personal finance, Ken says, and I quote, "My corporate color scheme is blue, but if you cut me, I bleed ACA green." And I have to, this is Kim Worth, I should have said that in the beginning, and I have to put in, Ken is very widely known as our annual conference entertainment and worth every penny, worth the price of admission. I'd also like to welcome Cordy and Lou and anybody else who ends up coming and joining us. We're hoping Chip Simon will join us in a moment. If not, we do have Ken. Ken, if you'd like to get started, that'd be great.
Sure. Okay. Thanks, Kim. And no pressure about that entertainment at the annual. I'll try to remember to explain what it is that Kim's referring to, but it involves show tunes with original lyrics. So, as Kim said, I have been an ACA member since the January 2000 training class. I came to financial planning from completely different fields, so I didn't have a practice to transition from, for instance, a CPA practice to a financial planning practice. I was starting from scratch. I didn't know anything more about the financial planning process other than what I had learned from the College for Financial Planning. And at the January 2000 training class, when we were introducing ourselves and explaining why we joined ACA, I said I had a lot of book learning, but I needed to learn how to help real people. And ACA did that very effectively, helped me transition from my CFP education experience to, okay, now with real-world people, how do I help them improve their financial lives? It was not the easiest decision in the world to join. There was a significant cost involved, and it's pretty similar, the cost is today. But I paid attention to the people who had said, well, you can learn how to do all this yourself by trial and error, or you can give your practice a jump start and get going much more quickly by taking advantage of what other people have learned over, at the time it was 20-plus years, and I think we can say 30-plus years now. And they were right. It was actually Stuart Farnell, an ACA member in Colorado, who was most influential in my deciding to join. And he had nothing to gain by telling me that I should join, just that he had had a good experience. And my experience has been... I can't imagine anybody else's experience has been better than mine. I get so much from ACA, both in terms of how to set up my practice, how to do the things that we might call back office things, the things we don't do right in front of the client necessarily, to exactly what to say to a client, depending on what their questions might be or what their concerns might be. The benefit to me was more than just here's how you complete your ADV, here's where you go for professional liability insurance coverage, here are software providers that provide tools you might be interested in, and by the way, here's the ACA discount code for those software providers. But one of the most useful things is all the software that's just a part of the ACA system that is included in the cost of the membership, the tools that I need to help my clients understand what they should do next are largely built on things like Excel spreadsheets that are very easy to understand, both for me to understand how to use them and for the clients to understand what I'm explaining to them. ACA provides those. When I need to write up the recommendation to hand to the client so they know what they should do next, ACA provides the format and the structure for those recommendations as well. One of the things that I loved about the ACA tools and the ACA system is that I had the freedom to change things if I wanted to. You can change just about anything you care to in the ACA system, except for being decidedly fee-only. you have a different viewpoint about how investments should be diversified, no one is going to be insisting that you handle the diversification questions in a particular party line way. With that said, I have found every time, almost every time, I've deviated from the ACA system, I've come back concluded, you know what, greater experience of people who've been doing this longer than I have really is where the greater value is. So a number of things that I've done differently, I've said, you know, this really isn't better, and it's just more work for me and harder for the client to understand. So I've gone back to the suggested ACA methodology. But it's important to understand that it's not like a franchise where if you don't make the hamburger exactly the same way every other franchisee makes the hamburger, that they'll kick you out. But you don't need to make that hamburger any differently. We don't have any vegetarians on the call, do we?
No.
No.
Because if we do, I'll be happy to use another analogy. We can talk about what goes into the salad. So you get to decide what ingredients go into your salad. But the ingredients that are in the recipe make a really delicious salad. I did have that moment of saying, okay, I'm writing a kind of big check here. I've never regretted it. And the ongoing fees are, of course, much less. And I get so much in return, not just the software tools, but a list of suggested investments, suggested mutual funds that a task force reviews from time to time, both actively managed and passive options, a back office of 150 other professionals just like me, serving clients just like mine. And when people ask what my clients are like, I say real people, people who have to work for a living or who are retired from working for a living. The discussion forum, being able to go to this group of people with a question, put it online and get responses from 2 or 3 or 6 or 12 people saying, here's my experience in dealing with this subject that might be brand new to you, Ken. In the same way, the opportunity to give back when other people have questions, I really appreciate. My specialties are public employees and retired women. That's who most of my clients are. When other colleagues have a public employee client and have a question that they don't know the answer to, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to help them out because I've gotten so much help from everybody else in ACA when I've had questions. If you're just starting out your fee-only practice, there are all manner of tools available in our online library. One of the most valuable includes NAPFA plans that you can use to help model the plan that you'll submit to NAPFA to make sure that you've covered all the bases that they want covered. and to get the NAPFA membership in place. The chance to be trained in a system where we don't have to hand the client a great big book of 100 pages that contains 87 recommendations, all of which, by the way, they should implement as soon as possible. That style of what I call big book planning, I don't think is very effective. Instead, ACA gives us a method to handle things, a topic at a time, where we're handing clients a few pages at a time, two or three or maybe four pages of explanation and recommendations. That's from me, because I tend to go on and on when I write things down. Law school will do that for you. Who just joined us?
Craig.
Hi, Craig. This is Ken Robinson from Cleveland. And I'm explaining some of the benefits that I get from the ACA system. Where are you from, Craig?
San Diego.
Okay, great. Well, I'm glad you could join us.
Thank you.
So I'm giving clients a few sheets of paper at a time to explain to them, here's what we've talked about and here's what to do next. And it's much less overwhelming for them. They appreciate being able to handle the financial planning process in smaller pieces. Those recommendations go into a binder I've given them, and over time we build up their financial plan. They have a record of everything that we've done together. Starting out with templates for each meeting to know this is what we're supposed to cover in each meeting. Here are the things that are important for me to include in the written recommendation. They're Microsoft Word templates. They're very easy to fill in and adapt. And if there are some things that are unique to Ohio, for instance, I can change them. Ohio, for example, has its own estate tax. So in the estate planning template, in addition to the discussion of federal estate taxes, I've modified that template to include a discussion of the estate taxes most of my clients have to deal with. Just knowing that, oh, this is a good place to put that, is itself a useful thing to do. And then I don't have to try to remember, all right, have I told them about the Ohio estate tax and where the floors are for it and how low the top rate is, and that they don't need to worry about it as much as the federal estate tax. Since it's in the meeting template, it's very easy to make sure I don't miss it. Another advantage that I've found with ACA is being able to draw on the experience of not just the people who've done this before me and longer than I have. You know, I've been in ACA for going on 11 years now. But the people who may have joined later than I have and just have had different experiences. So if I'm looking for an insurance provider for a client or someone to help with a mortgage refinance, we can put that on the discussion forum. You know, this is what I'm looking for, and someone will say, try Mike Conrath at Wells Fargo for mortgage refinances. Here are the sorts of things that he's helped with. If you're looking for a particular kind of tax planning software, can try tax tools and look at all the other things that you can get with tax tools in that same price that you may also use from time to time. I don't use those software from anybody else nearly as much as I use ACA software. Just being able to hear what people like and don't like about, say, tax preparation software has helped me make some important decisions and avoid some costly mistakes. I've mentioned some online sources that you can go to, the library to download templates and spreadsheets and forms, the discussion forum where every day there are questions and answers being shared among colleagues. And that kind of sharing is very much encouraged. If there's something that you want to know about, chances are there's an ACA colleague who is going to be eager to share that information with you. Our experience has been, even when we get more ACA advisors in one location, all of us end up with more business. So there's not the sense that we're competing with each other at all. When I joined ACA, I was the only ACA member in the greater Cleveland area, and there were only about 8 NAPFA people up here. I don't know why NAPFA isn't stronger in Cleveland. And then 1 year, we added 3 ACA members, one of them 15 minutes away from me, all of them within the radius from which I was drawing clients. And part of me did wonder, am I going to lose business to these other people? And the short answer is no, that I didn't. I had established my niche working with people in the public sector, and the clients that my local colleagues have been pursuing are not usually in that area. So I refer clients to them. They refer clients to me. If they want to work with somebody who happens to be a public employee, I'm happy for them to do it. And if they have questions for me, about working with public employees in Ohio, I'm happy to answer them. I've just seen so many times that the help that I give to other ACA members comes back to me many times over. Lately I put together a spreadsheet for analyzing clients' consumer debt, helping them understand not just what to pay off first, but why. And the first thing I did was share that with fellow ACA members and say, what have I forgotten in this spreadsheet? What can I do to make it better? And after it's reviewed a bit more, I'll be posting it on the website for ACA members to use, not that that's something that they have to use at all, but if it's helpful, why would I want them to have to reinvent the wheel? So there's a lot of support in a lot of different ways that I've gotten from ACA. A lot of people think of joining ACA as getting their first employee because they have a research staff. They have people to investigate what software is useful and what software is a waste of time. People who have already helped other people figure out how to hire that first staff person, if you really do want to hire a staff person in the office, something that I did this past February. How to bring an intern into the office if you want to consider bringing somebody, another professional into your practice. When it gets to that point, there are people in ACA who have done that. And the types of practice vary dramatically, from solo practitioners who work out of their house and meet clients in their home, in an office and home, to larger practices with some handful of advisors and a significant support staff, maybe 4 or 8 support staff, and everything in between. So I'm especially aware of that myself because I've just started the transition from a small practice where I'm the only advisor to a new vision of turning my practice into one with 2 or maybe 3 financial advisors and a support staff to help do their jobs. So, and I don't have any doubt that I'll get better information from my ACA colleagues about how to make that happen than I will anywhere else. So as you can probably guess, I'm an unabashed cheerleader for Alliance of Cambridge Advisors. We do what we do very well because the road you're about to travel down 150 of us have been down that road before, and the ones who were down that road first had 20 years experience before ACA was founded. So it's been, I've been delighted not only to have paid that initial fee to join, but to pay my dues every month or every year to continue to be an ACA member. It's the most important professional membership in my life. Some of my closest friends now and the people that I respect and admire the most. And this year, this fall, will be my 12th consecutive ACA conference that I've attended. It's the only can't-miss conference of the year for me. I have not attended any other professional conference as regularly, and I can foresee myself going to the ACA conference every year that I'm in practice. And I dare say that if you speak to other ACA advisors, and I'd encourage you to, you'll find a similar level of enthusiasm from them.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder what questions that you might have, Cordy or Lou or Craig.
Well, while you're on the topic of the annual conference, I know that that fee is included in the ACA fees that are paid up front. However, since September, and if you were to join now, the October group training would be the first training that you would go through. So would you recommend, having not gone through the group training, to attend the ACA conference or wait until maybe 2012?
I think I would recommend attending the conference.
Mm-hmm.
So much of the ACA experience is about collegiality and contact with your colleagues. And while there is, you know, real nuts and bolts learning that goes on at the ACA conference, enough to make it worth going even if you didn't like the people who were there, you will love the people who are there. The first conference I attended, I said it was like being at a family reunion just with people I'd never met. And you'll make professional connections that will leave you more comfortable picking up the phone and calling somebody and saying, hey, Ken, I have this question about working with this retired woman, you know, with this widow, and I wasn't really quite sure what to do. I might answer by saying, well, you say she's a recent widow. You probably want to talk to Kathleen Real. She wrote the book on widowhood, and that's not just figurative. That's literal. She just published a book for recent widows that it's not just talking about the money, but about all the things that are more important than the money for people going through that really wrenching reestablishment of what their lives are like. And those kinds of personal contacts that you'll make at the conference, I think, can be valuable even before you get to group instruction. We had a class in May that I assisted in teaching, and I'll be one of the instructors this fall at the group instruction as well. But one of the people who attended group instruction just last month, was it last month or the month before, Kim? I can't remember. Maybe it was April. but she had been at the conference in 2010,
mm-hmm.
And was very glad that she went.
Mm-hmm.
So I would encourage you to go to the conference, even if you've not been to group instruction yet. You'll have had enough exposure to the ACA system that that things should make sense to you. And if they don't, you can turn to the person to your left or to your right, and they'll be glad to help bring you up to speed. And if it's their first conference, just come find me at the break.
Thank you.
Sure. What else would people like to know?
Ken, this is Lou.
Yeah.
You're also an attorney.
Yes.
Do you do the estate's wills, is that part of the service that you're including, that you have your own sign out for that, it's part of the included, or do you just maintain your degree, the JD?
It's more the latter than the former. The only law that I do is now in connection with my, to serve my clients in my ACA practice. It's been years since I've gone to court, and I like it that way. I don't care to go. There's a reason I left law. Mm-hmm. I can and sometimes do write wills for my clients, but I'm actually investigating lowercase a alliances with, let's just say, cooperative professional relationships with lawyers where I can start farming out all of that work. The ACA model does envision making sure that your clients have wills, but it's designed for people who are not lawyers and to help them understand you probably don't want to go farther than this place so that you don't have to worry about anyone suggesting you're engaging in the unlicensed practice of law. I've actually been evaluating whether or not I should keep my law license. As soon as some other major transitions are taken care of, like having the full-time administrative assistant and bringing an intern into the practice, I will probably turn my attention back to that question. And it may be that in 2 years, maybe I won't be a lawyer anymore. But it won't hurt my ACA practice one bit. Does that answer your question?
It does. I mean, you know, I kind of wonder how the market, you know, are you marketing, you know, were you potentially marketing as I'm an attorney and I do this? Or I'm a financial advisor and, you know, after the fact, I can handle the, you know, it's convenient, but I can handle the wills and the estates.
When I started not have, and let me be clear about how I began, I passed the CFP exam in 1999, but I had no work experience virtually no work experience that they would credit. So I didn't actually have my CFP until, according to the piece of paper on my wall, January 7th, 2003. And I was practicing for 3 years with a license in Ohio, but without the CFP, which was even then the credential that everyone was looking for. Mm-hmm. So I made kind of a point of putting the JD on my business cards. And most people didn't comment on it, and about one quarter asked, so are you a lawyer? For technical reasons, you're not allowed to say attorney at law and financial planner on the same business card. That has to do with lawyers, not with financial planners, and I won't waste your time with those details. I don't know that it really made the difference in anybody becoming a client of mine. A few clients say that it did make a difference in getting them in the door. But I can say with great confidence that it has nothing to do with the services that I provide that keep them renewing their retainer agreements with me year after year after year after year. It does bring to mind mentioning the retainer style of working with clients. I had, when I first was trying to transition into financial planning, The big question that I had was, how can I bring myself to look a client in the eye and not stammer when I say that a full financial plan is going to cost more than $1,000? My minimum fee now for the first year is $2,000, and I can't remember the last time I charged a $2,000 fee. I have a personal target for fees for my practice to avoid the any suggestion of price fixing. I'll tell you what it was a year ago. Kim, is this okay? We're not treading into dangerous ground here.
Yeah, just keep it general. You're good.
Okay. Okay. I I a year ago was saying that I like to see my first year fees in the neighborhood of $6,000 and my renewals in the neighborhood of $3,000 to $4,000. And I have a certain number of clients that I want to serve every year. And as you might imagine, those have gone up. The top of my fee range is $20,000 for the first year. And while I've never actually had a client hit that, that has more to do with my choosing to work with public employees. But I'm very glad that I chose to work with public employees. Because it's a niche that I already knew something about. Something else that I got from ACA was the understanding that as I would market to a very narrow group of people, that didn't mean that other people would fail to look at me. But the public employees know they want to come to me. My declared objective is to be the most sought after and most trusted financial advisor to public employees in the state of Ohio. And I would have felt that was very egotistical to be able to say that before I joined ACA. And the difference is that after a relatively short time, I realized it was actually possible and learned something about how to make it happen. And at the moment, quite frankly, I have as many clients as I can handle and more keep calling. So we're reviewing our systems and streamlining, and I'm making better use of this relatively new administrative assistant so that we can increase the capacity and get good advice out to more people. What other questions do people have?
Ken, it's Cordy. You said that you passed the CFP in 1999 and you received your actual CFP certification in 2003,
right,
and that you did not have any clients or books to transfer. How did they credit that with, I mean, your experience, because you were starting from scratch?
Well, it's something that you will want to verify with the CFP Board of Standards, because they of course are the ones who get the last word on what counts, and they may have changed what counts as experience by then. But until the end of January 2000, I had another full-time job. I was working in the public sector in a field only very tangentially related to personal financial planning, and tangential enough that they didn't credit me with it. But once I didn't have another full-time job, they, quite frankly, took my word that I was engaged in financial planning practice full-time. And they did not care whether it was 40 hours a week of doing financial planning or whether some portion of that was selecting financial planning software or learning about the ACA way of doing asset allocation. Evaluating which funds from the suggested funds list that I got from ACA I wanted to actually recommend to clients. So the CFP board was happy with that. And ACA did give me a method to begin to attract clients that didn't rely on my having a CFP. My colleagues also helped me understand, hey, just because the CFP board doesn't recognize your experience, that doesn't mean NAPFA won't recognize your experience. And NAPFA recognized relevant experience that I think the CFP board should have recognized. Either a year or a year and a half before, they admitted me to NAPFA at least a year before I was admitted awarded my CFP designation. And having a more experienced colleague say, oh, of course you should ask NAPFA that question, that made a huge difference, because NAPFA is the organization that people tend to think of first when they think of fee only. Before they think of ACA or anything else, Although I'm starting to hear people, when I ask, how did you hear about us, less and less am I hearing, well, I found you on the NAPFA site. I still hear a lot of that. But I'm beginning to hear more and more, well, I heard about ACA.
Thank you.
Sure.
Ken, is there, and I don't know, maybe this is a better question for Ken, but is there like a set standard fee structure that the ACA recommends? You know, here's what we suggest as a basic retainer, and year two it drops to this. I mean, you last year were at six, and then between 3 to 4, like almost a 50% reduction. Is there set things, or is that kind of up to the individual practice?
You're free to set your pricing however you care to. There is no ACA party line. I think I'm saying this accurately, Kim, and please correct me if I'm wrong. There's no ACA party line on what you're supposed to charge. There's a lot of experience among advisors who have said that my renewal fees, I used to charge a renewal fee of, I'm going to make some numbers up here, 50%, but now I'm charging 70% for renewal fees. There are some ACA members who charge the same thing in renewal years that they charge in the first year. There are others who charge quite a bit less in renewal fees than they do the first year, saying, I'm doing a lot less work in the second year and in the subsequent years. So I can handle a lot more renewal clients than I can handle first-year clients. And I have found that to be true, and my particular fee structure reflects that. But you're free to set your fees any way you see fit, as long as it is fee only.
Yeah, it really does vary, and ACA does provide in their ACA system what they call the fee calculator. And that kind of, and Ken, you correct me if I'm wrong, that kind of gets you started out and as a suggested starting place. But absolutely, if you were going to ask all of our members, I think now we're at 167 members. So if you were going to ask, I bet you wouldn't get the same answer twice. So it does vary, but ACA does provide some sort of a suggestion to get you started.
And that fee calculator that Kim just mentioned, it's an Excel workbook. You can think of it as kind of a fee calculating methodology, you know, reduced to an Excel spreadsheets. It's very easy to modify so that you're charging what you feel is appropriate. I hasten to add, it's not the party line that you have to use this calculator, and certainly you're not required to use the numbers that appear in this calculator as examples when you download it.
Right.
But I do use that calculator. I have my own numbers in it that I developed over time, and with consultation with other ACA members, and it's kept me from the fatal mistake of undercharging for my expertise. You'll be amazed how people will be very pleased to pay a fee that you are confident you are worth. And there's a decent chance that for at least one or two of you on this call, you're worth a lot more than you may realize. And it's fellow ACA members who helped me understand that. And, you know, for that matter, ACA training that helped me understand that.
Yeah, there's never a point, and I hope that this is coming across, but ACA, once you join, you're never left in the lurches. So there's the Cambridge system. They train you on the actual system. And like Ken said, you can always change that system for your individual business. But there's always guidance from step A to Z. You've got guidance from the Cambridge system, from the training program. We have a person that acts as Arlene Moss. She acts as the coach to help you along the way to get you started in year one and year two. And then as you get into ACA, into the later years, like Ken was saying, you've got a full back office of experienced, like-minded advisors. So you asked about the fee, or the fee, that is just one portion of what it is that everybody helps you with. And ACA training helps you with.
The system itself is, it's very complete. It's, you know, built based upon real-world experience serving people who worked for a living rather than people who may have happened to have had the good fortune to be born into a wealthy family. It's not that those people don't deserve help, but they probably have all the help they need. There are a number of ACA members who say, we grow our own millionaires. But that's not a requirement. There are members who specialize in serving highly compensated employees in Silicon Valley. Kathleen Reel, who I mentioned earlier, works exclusively with pastors. There are other people who focus on working with business owners or perhaps with widows or, as I said in my case, public employees. The expertise from one type of practitioner, it's often very transferable to people who are working in different, you know, primarily with different kinds of clients. But the
when you started,
go ahead.
Did you start your business right with ACA, or were you like, did you open your business and then join at a later time with ACA?
I technically opened my business in 1996 because that's the first time I got paid to give financial advice. It was very, very part-time because I was working full-time in the public sector, so I had maybe three or four moonlighting-type projects with people who knew me. But that was it. I went to ACA training in January 2000, taking vacation time from work. I don't recall if I happened to mention to them where I was taking my vacation. That might have slipped my mind to alert them to that. But then on March 14th, 2000, I dedicated my office, which was then in my home, that's the day from which I mark my full-time financial planning practice, and that was as an ACA member. A number of our members have joined ACA after having already established a successful financial planning practice or have joined transitioning something like a tax practice, for instance. More than one, if I'm not mistaken, Kim, transitioning from clinical psychology, from being a counselor, to an ACA financial planning practice, and even transitioning some of their clients in the process. So not something I would have anticipated. So it's been successfully done.
And then we do also, you know, in addition to that, there are many members who started out fresh with ACA that didn't have any transitioning clients and or just started out. I think one of our newer members didn't have any clients. He's been here a year, and now he's very happy because he got, which takes a lot of work, but he got 12 clients in the past year. So it can be done. It just takes time and effort.
And learning how to do that, learning how to do the marketing that actually gets you the client, learning how to get in front of people to let them know what it is that you do, that's something we teach as well. Not just what to do with the client once they get in the door, but how to get the clients to want to work with you, how to present your fee in a way that's not scary to the client, and that they will, that you won't have to justify your fee to the client. They will do the justifying for you, and sometimes they can't sign fast enough. Does everybody sign up? No. But it's certainly a lot easier with what we learn about marketing from ACA than anything I had come up with myself. And let me say, too, that when there are outside sources of information that that we find are very valuable, you know, we let people know. There's a particular particular resource on marketing that's not something written by an ACA member, but that's a part of the ACA core approach that everybody's taught. There are there was another example of something similar that that I was going to mention. It just slipped my mind because I was thinking about the marketing in particular. But there are other resources that are particularly well suited to an ACA practice. I should say, too, we've talked about a number of different kinds of people who've joined ACA. We have many, many members who used to work on the commission side.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to speak to somebody who is entirely devoted to a fee-only approach, speak to a fee-only advisor who used to be paid commissions. They will have switched very much on purpose, and they will tell you they would never go back. Which makes it easier for us to have a resource to help us understand what is it they're being told on the, you know, from commission compensated providers. What do we need to be able to help people overcome, perhaps, from say the mutual funds that they were sold in the bank lobby, as an example.
We have a few more minutes, so if you, any of you guys have any more questions, go ahead. Don't be shy. Throw them out. If not, I do want to say if anything comes up after the call, please let me know. I can absolutely, if I don't know the answer, get it for you. And we do have volunteer members that are more than happy to jump on the phone with you as well. So any final questions?
Ken, before you let your attorney's license expire, do you feel like there's a need for a business attorney and an accountant with a in addition to the ACA training that you receive? And also, do you feel like ACA training helps with setting up QuickBooks correctly to do the back office functions in your practice?
You know, I can't really speak to the QuickBooks question because I haven't looked at that piece of the ACA system in quite some time. I do have QuickBooks set up, but I got help with, in my case, got help with that from the CPA that I've been working with since before I was an ACA advisor. You'll get a lot of, for instance, regulatory compliance help from ACA. I don't believe it's a substitute for a compliance lawyer or a compliance consultant. It does help me approach my compliance lawyer with a lot more knowledge. So I might have a $30 phone call with him instead of a $450 project with him, because I already know the right questions to ask. And the ACA training and resources helped me with that dramatically. So I've saved a ton in legal fees over the years just to make sure, you know, just to make sure that I'm compliant, because I already had enough of a foundation from ACA. You'd asked about one other kind of professional as well. Was that an accountant?
Yes.
The only thing I use my accountant for is for tax preparation and helping me with my filings related to the fact that I happen to be set up as an S corporation. Other ACA members are set up as LLCs. I think that's probably the most common model, either LLC or sole proprietor. But I can't speak to whether ACA can help you get the QuickBooks set up. I just don't have that knowledge.
Thank you.
You're welcome. There was one other question, I think.
This was more towards Kim, but this is Lou in the Lehigh Valley, and was just wondering if I could get a name of somebody local to talk to.
Absolutely. Let's see. I will try and get you that information. I also wanted to let Lou and Cordy and Craig, all of you know, I can set up a time to do a webinar and actually show you what the community looks like so you can get a better feel for everything that Kim was talking about. So I'll send you some information on that, and I will definitely see if I can find somebody locally for you to talk to, Lou. Cordy and Craig, if you would like that as well, just let me know.
Yeah, please do.
Okay.
Include us.
That'd be great.
Okay. I'll absolutely do that.
If there's more any of you would like to know from me, you can get my number from Kim. Is that all right, Kim?
That's absolutely fine.
Great. Okay. You can get my number from Kim, and feel free to give me a call. I'd be delighted to talk with you, you know, one-on-one if you like.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I can't thank you enough, Ken, because something must have happened where Chip couldn't make it. We all know things happen. And I can't thank you enough, Ken, for taking over the entire call and helping us out and answering everybody's questions.
I'm happy to help.
Thank you, Lou, Cordy, and Craig. And I'll get back to all three of you and see if I can get some members to speak with you on the side. So, everybody, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a great day, everyone.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.